Is the law the opposite of the gospel? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Is the Law Bad? Some Myths About God's Law. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read about Tim Wood's journey from many different Christian confessions to the sound and seamless theology of the Lutheran Confession, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
To everyone here at the Islamic Society of Baltimore, thank you for welcoming me here today. I want to thank Muslim American leaders from across this city and this state, and some who traveled even from out of state to be here.
That's President Obama speaking yesterday at the Islamic Society of Baltimore. He had a lot to say there about Islam. He had a lot to say about religious freedom. I guess you could say one thing that he said again and again in the course of this speech is we are one American family. And he connected that to religious freedom and what he perceives, and apparently many Muslims perceive, as discrimination against Muslims in an era of terrorism. He drew that line that he often drives between ISIS and Islam, between terrorism and Islam. We're going to explore some of what the president had to say yesterday when he was speaking to a Muslim crowd there at the Islamic Society of Baltimore. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest for the first half hour or so. We'll examine the president's speech there at an Islamic center. Then Dr. David Scarer joins us for part two of our series, responding to liberal proof text today, ecumenism, that is, church fellowship. It's often just radically misunderstood by liberal Christianity. We'll find out how and why with Dr. David Scarer. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for our regular series, Christ in the Old Testament Today, Deuteronomy 34, The Death of Moses. You can join us for the next 2 hours if you have questions or comments as well. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Or you can use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the president's address yesterday at a Baltimore mosque, Dr. Alvin Schmidt, professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
How would you summarize President Obama's address yesterday at the Baltimore mosque?
Well, it is full of a lot of pious generalities that don't stand up historically. As a whole, if one knows any history of Islam, this speech is in fact basically a piece of propaganda that doesn't square with history. And given that I suppose a lot of people don't know about the history of Islam, I suppose many of them probably were impressed by it. But for the most part, it's very far off the mark in terms of historical accuracy.
So before we hear from some of what the president had to say at the mosque yesterday, when he addresses an Islamic crowd, he is addressing them as, what shall we say, he wanted to make the big point near the end of the speech that we are not, what did he say, we're Muslims and Americans, I think is what he said.
Yes,
there.
You're right. He does say that, right.
And he drew some parallels with the civil rights movement. What did you make of some of those statements?
Well, we're Muslims and Americans. That is fine if Muslims would really have internalized, and the evidence shows that they don't, have internalized American values, namely the freedom of speech and religion. You don't have that, for example, in Muslim communities or Muslim societies anywhere. You can go to any Muslim society, even the most moderate ones, like in Turkey. You don't have freedom of speech. And so basic American value is that you have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and that is simply not a value that is part of Islam. It may be of some individual Muslims, but then they are really basically deviants, and they're not true Muslims. And so to say that Muslims are Americans, I would say, would you please define that? And I just basically gave a brief definition. It means that we believe in freedom of speech and freedom of religion, freedom of coercion, and so on down the line. And Muslim does not do that. It's simply also when he tries to say at the very beginning of the speech that the very word Islam means peace. Well, maybe the word means peace, but the history of Islam, including the Quran, totally betrays that. For example, you read from in the Quran, fight those who do not believe in Allah. Another one, O you who believe, fight those who are unbelievers, who are near you, and let them find hardness in you. And it goes on and on. So the religion of peace is nothing but propaganda, and the 1,400 years of Islamic history indicate, for example, that it never had been a religion of peace. There's only peace in religion if you totally capitulate to them and to its teachings and never give any resistance, not even physical, but simply in terms of speech. And there we go back again. There is no freedom of speech in the Islamic religion. You can read the Quran, you can read the Sharia and the Hadith, and it's very, very clear that freedom of religion, as we define it in Western society, is simply non-existent in Muslim society and simply not something that's internalized if you are really a true Muslim.
I have one more question before we hear from the president. That is, my thought, I was watching it in real time yesterday in preparation for our conversation here. My thought was, if the president were to ask to speak at a mosque in a Muslim country, would he be allowed and would he be as warmly welcomed as he was yesterday in Baltimore?
No, to ask the question is to answer it. Definitely not. So this is, again, something that he doesn't mention, and many people who watch him on the television probably were somewhat impressed, although I've seen already on the Internet there have been some very good critics who have basically highly criticized and shown the weakness of the speech. So, no, it simply would not be the case as you ask the question.
The president began his remarks yesterday by listing some facts. Here's one of the facts he listed.
Here's another fact. Islam has always been part of America. Starting in colonial times, many of the slaves brought here from Africa were Muslim. And even in their bondage, some kept their faith alive. A few even won their freedom and became known to many Americans. And when enshrining the freedom of religion in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, our founders meant what they said when they said it applied to all religions.
What's your response there, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, yeah, right. None of America's founding documents make any oblique reference even to Muslims. So he's reading something into the founding documents or that's always been known to many Americans. It's simply not true. When he says known to many Americans, one has to ask who. And Muslims or Islam has always been a part of America. What really does that mean, given that there were some African slaves brought over who were Muslims? That is hardly a good example to say that they have always been a part of America. And in fact, the slaves that were brought here against their will, and for the longest time, they really didn't value being here. So to say part of America needs a lot of explanation.
Here is another claim of history from President Obama yesterday in Baltimore.
Jefferson and John Adams had their own copies of the Quran. Benjamin Franklin wrote that even if the Mufti of Constantinople were to send a missionary to preach to us, he would find a pulpit at his service. So this is not a new thing.
Dr. Schmidt, what was he saying there, and how would you respond?
Well, that is a passage that makes one take a deep breath in order to really believe that he could say that. For example, citing Jefferson and John Adams. What about the history? Why did Jefferson and Adams have a Quran? He doesn't say that. Maybe he doesn't know it. The reason they had a Quran was to understand the violence that was going on in the Mediterranean on the northern shores of Africa, called the Barbary States, where, for example, the Muslims acted as pirates for the North African countries and would confiscate ships, take passengers captive, would ask for hostage money, for example, for the country that owned these ships. And if they didn't, if people were put into slavery. Well, Jefferson had experience when he was a ambassador in France before the Washington was elected, et cetera, as the first president, had a lot of contact with the Europeans who were basically capitulating to these particular Barbary pirates, as they were often referred. And by the way, they were not regular pirates. Most pirates were usually were independent individuals. But these men worked for Muslim governments in northern Africa, for example, Tripoli, which today is the country of Libya. And so Jefferson had already contact with the Europeans, who were basically frequently held captive in terms of their ships being captured and confiscated, and then had to pay tribute money. And if they did pay tribute money, their ships would be allowed to sail in the Mediterranean. Similarly, John Adams, who was ambassador in England before he was chosen to be vice president to run with George Washington, had experience with the British experience that they've had in the Mediterranean. So they got the hold of the Quran to see what motivated these individuals to do it. That's why they bought a Quran, not to learn from their religion, not, for example, to use it later on as Keith Ellison and Carson, for example, two individuals elected to the House of Representatives recently, Carson from Indiana and Ellison from Minnesota, to had to take the oath of office on it. Jefferson and Adams wanted to understand Islam. That's why they had it, and for no other reason. Jefferson certainly didn't believe in any of the things that are taught in the Quran, nor did John Adams. So when you bring up that particular thing, and because most people don't know any history, they get away with it and tend to think, well, Americans saw the Quran equal to the Bible, for example. Well, again, a horrible misstatement of history. In fact, it's really disingenuous to the nth degree.
And perhaps the most pertinent fact, Muslim Americans enrich our lives today in every way. They're our neighbors, the teachers who inspire our children, the doctors who trust us with our health, future doctors like Saba. They're scientists who win Nobel Prizes. Young entrepreneurs who are creating new technologies that we use all the time.
Your response, Dr. Schmidt, what is he saying?
Yes, okay. When I saw the reference to the scientists who win Nobel Prizes, well, there are so far Nobel Prizes have been given to 800 individuals since its existence. Muslims have received 12 so far. Now, Islamic religion is 23% of the world's population. So if they were so equal and so equivalent to all the non-Muslims, they should have received 184 Nobel Peace Prizes, not 12. I already indicated in my book, did you mention at the outset, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam, for example, that only 5% of scientific contributions come from Muslim societies. And this is another example that, sure, there are a few individuals that have won a Nobel Peace Prize, but nothing in proportion to the population of Islam as a whole. As I said, 23% of the world's population today is Islamic, about 1.6 billion, rather. And so they're far behind. In fact, it doesn't speak well at all of Islam in terms of its scientific interest and scientific complement. And by the way, there is plenty of books that have been written on that topic, or at least articles as well, for example, that basically Islamic religion does not encourage scientific thought or scientific research because it's basically a threat to what the Quran and the Sharia teach.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about President Obama's address Wednesday at a Baltimore mosque. On this Thursday afternoon, February the 4th, he's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. There's still time to register for the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th. The theme is Standing Firm in a Hostile World. This confessional Lutheran conference features Issues Etc. guests Adam Francisco, David J. Weber, Joe Abrahamson, attorney Mark Stern, and Professor Alan Quist. Don't wait. Register today for the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th, faithlutheransa.org. FaithLutheranSA.org.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Thursday afternoon. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're responding to President Obama's address Wednesday at a Baltimore mosque. Dr. Schmidt, one of the big themes in President Obama's speech yesterday in Baltimore was religious freedom.
That doesn't mean that those of us with religious faith should not be involved. We have to be active citizenry. But we have to respect the fact that we have freedom of religion.
So why did that particular line stand out to you, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, it stands out because, again, he's trying to give the impression that for Islam and for Muslims as a whole, freedom of religion is a similar value that we have in our society. And that just simply betrayed from the day that Muhammad came into existence and created the religion and politics of Islam. It's simply the Sharia, 1,200 pages, it denies religion in every paragraph that you read. And if Muslims, for example, leave the Islamic religion, they, in a true Muslim country, in many cases, like Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and so on and so forth, that's the end of their life. They will be incarcerated and executed. So there is no freedom of religion, none whatsoever. Again, this is what I said earlier. It sort of makes you take your breath when you hear a lot of the things that he's saying. There's simply no historical record that Islam has ever supported freedom of religion anywhere. Even, for example, in free countries like this, in our country, you don't see them, for example, you don't see Islam people when they're talking on television or like promoting freedom of religion. It simply isn't found. It's never heard.
Uh, And when any religious group is targeted, we all have a responsibility to speak up. And we have to reject a politics that seeks to manipulate prejudice or bias and targets people because of religion.
Dr. Schmidt, is there some irony in the president's statement there?
Yeah, so that's putting it mildly. To say that any religion group is targeted, we all have a responsibility to speak up. When have you or I ever heard a Muslim, prominent Muslim, speaking up for Christians who, for example, are killed and beheaded by ISIS, for example, or anywhere else? The silence is actually deafening. It simply doesn't exist. And so if Muslims were to speak up, for example, even in this country, about the terror that is done in the name of Islam by ISIS and by Al-Qaeda and Hamas, for example, they would be treading on dangerous ground. It simply would not happen if they valued their life and their freedom. Now, in this country, obviously, they couldn't captivate them or incarcerate them as they would where they are in control. But they would, for example, in this country, frequently lose the friendship of their friends and nevertheless lose a great deal of freedom, and their life would constantly be in threats. I know four ex-Muslim terrorists who are now Christians in this country that I've been in contact with for the last few years. And every one of them, for example, when they speak in different places, now as Christian, they typically have guards in attendance because they're afraid what might happen to their life. So where is the freedom of religion? It's simply not there.
Groups like ISIL are desperate for legitimacy. They try to portray themselves as religious leaders and holy warriors who speak for Islam.
You highlighted that particular phrase in the president's that mention of, as he says, ISIL. Why so, Dr. Schmidt?
Yes, if you know, he consistently uses ISIL, you know, the Islamic State of Islam and Lebanon. Well, most people refer to it as ISIS, ISIS, Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Why does he insist on making the L, which stands for Lebanon? Basically, this is an attempt on his part, for example, to indicate that, and there are a couple of different reasons you can give for it. One is that his failed policy in Iraq and in Syria would draw attention to the fact when you use ISIS. But when you use the word Lebanon, which is a much bigger territory, basically the whole eastern coast of the Mediterranean, which even includes Israel all the way down to Egypt and all the way up to Syria, for example, then it is why he uses the word ISIL. And he consistently does this. I don't know how many people catch it. Some individuals I've noticed on the computers and so forth have noticed this particular example. But if I may, I'd like to go back to one more thing that we talked about earlier relative to John Adams and Jefferson. And what I'd like to point out, for example, after they found out how Islam or the Muslim terrorists worked in Jefferson's first term in 8004, he took office in 1801, I should say, not 8000, 1801. And in 1804, he sent a ship captained by Lieutenant Stephen Decatur with 70 Marines who captured the American Philadelphia ship, which the Muslims had captured, and again, we're going to try to get money, tribute money, et cetera, whatnot, and took passengers captive. They stormed the ship, burned it, and as a result of that particular success, no American was killed. You have today in the U.S. Marines song, "From the Shores of Tripoli to the Halls of Montezuma." That is, for example, what happened after Jefferson learned what Islam was all about relative to the terrorism that was going on the Mediterranean and the northern shores of Africa. And by the way, the northern shores of Africa were conquered by Islam already in 643. So basically, this was an existence of capturing ships and the like for basically 200 years. And then a few years later, another battle took place at Derna, also, for example, in Tripoli. And again, the Americans were successful in that particular battle, and that has largely brought an end to the Muslim pirates completely bringing about, brought an end to the capturing of ships and gaining money from them, in terms that was a basic hostage procedure and basically a Muslim terrorist. So there's nothing new about terrorism in Islam. It was there way back then. But anyhow, this was a significant achievement on the part of Jefferson, and probably would never have done what he did had he not been familiar with how Islam operates as a result of his reading the Quran, and that's why he had it.
Here at this mosque and across our country and around the world, Muslim leaders are roundly and repeatedly and consistently condemning terrorism. And around the globe, Muslims who've dared to speak out have often been targeted and even killed. So those voices are there. We just have to amplify them more.
Are those voices there, Dr. Schmidt?
Yeah. Where are they? Where are they? This is what I say. When have you heard them speak out the way he mentioned? What more can one say? It's simply a piece of fiction that he is talking about. And also might mention, this particular mosque that he appeared at has most people don't know, but it is under FBI surveillance and has been for the longest time. It's one of the more radical mosques in the country. Just a couple of nights ago, one of the individuals by the name of Jasser, he calls himself a modern Muslim, and he is very much opposed to what Islam generally does. He says this is one of the most radical mosques in the country. And it is also a mosque, for example, that had as its leader, in two different terms, who basically was a full-fledged member of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is an organization that was formed in Egypt in 1928. And this is an organization that has fostered and created ISIS. It's created, for example, Hamas. It's created, for example, also the Al-Qaeda, and so on down the line. And also what's interesting in this particular mosque is that when the president doesn't appear, women are totally segregated by a wall from the men that participate and worship in that building. Well, all of that was not seen on television, and of course it was, for that moment, completely done away with. But if you were to go back there today, the partition would be there again, and there have been some women, even, by the way, I noticed on the internet, that have been protesting, Muslim women, that is, protesting their extreme segregation in this particular mosque. Again, this is not known to the public, and probably most of them will never know it. But it's an irony and a tragedy that he picked that particular mosque to make his appearance.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest on this Thursday afternoon, February the 4th. We are responding to President Obama's address Wednesday at a Baltimore mosque. Dr. Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam, and The Triumph of the West. We'll be right back.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
How do John's famous words, "the Word became flesh," help us understand John's gospel? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is the Concordia Commentary on John 1:1 through 7:1. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or check it out at issuesetc.org. This new commentary covers the first six chapters of John. the Concordia Commentary on John by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Bill Weinrich.
This is Pastor Clint Poppe, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado. St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri. Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri. Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana, Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee, and Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We are responding to President Obama's address yesterday at a Baltimore mosque. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. A little bit later, Dr. David Scare will join us for part two of our series on responding to liberal proof texts. Today we'll talk about ecumenism, and then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us to find Christ in the Old Testament. Dr. Schmidt, before the break, you mentioned something about women in the mosque there that the president had decided to visit on Wednesday. Here's some thoughts from the president on Islam and women.
Like people of all religions, Muslims living their faith in a modern pluralistic world are called upon to uphold human rights, to make sure that everyone has opportunity. That includes the aspirations of women and youth and all people. If we expect our own dignity to be respected, so must we respect the dignity of others.
Dr. Schmidt, what's the track record of Islam worldwide when it comes to the aspirations of women?
Yeah, well, aspirations of women. Well, women in the Islamic societies do not have a lot of aspiration that can be attained or reached. Let me just read you a couple of examples. In the Hadith, three things nullify a Muslim man's prayer. If a dog, a donkey, or a woman passes in front of the man while praying, it is nullified. What's that say about women? There's another one right out of the Quran. Your wives are a tilth, a field that is, for you to go, so go into your tilth whenever you like, referring to having sex with a woman whenever you like. It is also, for example, practiced in Muslim societies that a Muslim woman's testimony in a court is only worth one half of a man's testimony. It takes two women to testify to the same thing to equal the testimony of one man. In addition to that, a Muslim woman must ask her husband if she may go to a mosque if she is a true Muslim. You also have, for example, it's said, for example, in mosques, men are in front, then boys, and then women. That's part of the Sharia. Well, this is exactly what's happening in this particular mosque. The women are partitioned off into a separate place. And it further says, for example, in Sharia, a wife must also pray behind her husband, not beside him, and certainly not in front of him. Women are to veil themselves And here the passage out of the Quran. O Prophet, referring to Muhammad, say to your wives and your daughters and the women of the believers, that refers to the Muslims, that they let down upon them their overgarments. This will be more proper. This refers basically, this the Islamic passage out of the Quran, why women should wear a veil, or for example, in some form or another, maybe even the burqa, for example, as well. And the hadith, the extra sayings, again, command women to be veiled. Women, for example, do not have the right, for example, to invite a man into their premise. In fact, in most instances, I have tried it. If you want to be, you know, brave, go into a big public mall, like in Washington, D.C., or wherever you are, and there's a Muslim woman walking by herself, and you, as a stranger, go up and ask for directions. You should summarily walk by you as though she doesn't hear you. Why? Because that's what they're taught. Women are not to have the freedom that men have. So when he talks about aspirations of women, it is just, again, as I said earlier, breathtaking how he can say this, because even in that very mosque, the women are highly segregated and not treated equally to men, and outside of the mosque as well, if they are really truly Muslims.
After more than 200 years, our blended heritage, the patchwork quilt, which is America, that is not a weakness, that is one of our greatest strengths. It's what makes us a beacon to the world.
Why did that phrase stand out to you, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, it stands out again because, as we've been saying earlier, the 200 years, you're obviously referring back to the beginning and the founding of this country in the late 1700s, is a patchwork of quilt, for example. Well, again, it's a patchwork of quilt in some respects relative to, for example, ethnic backgrounds of Germans and Scottish people, Irish people, French, and so on, that came to this country. In that sense, it's a patchwork of quilt. But it was never designed to be a patchwork, for example, as he intends in this particular example, namely that Islam was given all the same rights and privileges as the others were. It, for one, there were hardly any present, for example, 200 years ago in this country, except for the few slaves that we mentioned earlier. And so to say a blended heritage, and by the way, very much is an opposition anyhow with what he and all the multiculturalists today are promoting, namely that every group should attain its cultural identity and not become assimilated. Well, if you do that, then there is no blended heritage. Then you have not a melting pot, but then you have a boiling pot of individuals, for example, like you have had in Bosnia until recently, individual groups fighting each other because they did not assimilate and did not have common values and did not have a blended heritage. So again, it's a contradiction relative to what Islam has done and has continues to do. So again, it's another instance that you just sort of wonder, how can a man say this and get away with it?
I want to recognize Congressman John Sarbanes, who is here, as well as two other great leaders in Congress and proud Muslim Americans, Congressman Keith Ellison from the great state of Minnesota, and Congressman Andre Carson from the great state of Indiana.
Why did that introduction there, finally, for you, Dr. Schmidt, why did that stand out to you?
Well,
in the
I think because these are two poster boys that he can use, for example, that Americans have been very accepting of Islam, and to some extent they really have. I wouldn't necessarily argue with them on that, have elected two individuals to the House of Representatives in Washington. And both of them, people probably pretty much know by that, took the oath of office on the Quran. And whose copy did they use? Well, I'm not sure about Carson, but I do know, for example, that Ellison specifically went to the Library of Congress and attained Jefferson's Quran to take the oath of office. I believe Carson took it on the Quran, but it was not on the Jefferson's copy. So again, as I said a moment ago, it's basically two poster boys to indicate the greatness of Islam in the United States and that we ought to be proud of them and not, for example, criticize Islam for It's many people who engage in terroristic acts in this country as well as universally in other countries as well, whether it's in France or whether it's in England or even in San Bernardino, California.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. David Scare. We have a series with him. We'll be doing part two of this series, responding to liberal proof texts. We're going to take up the texts that are often used in liberal circles to promote a liberal brand of ecumenism. We'll get a definition of that word, by the way, when we come back with Dr. David Scare.
Means of grace are the very thing that evangelicals are looking for.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And so in my presentation, we will talk about some of the alternative means of grace that evangelicals have created in their quest to find some kind of certainty of their own salvation. But then we will then explore back and look at what God's Word says regarding baptism, the Lord's Supper, as well as holy absolution as the means by which, you know, these are outside of us, that God gives us signs and assurance that we are forgiven and in Him and have a right standing with Him.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough, Making the Case for the Means of Grace, June 10th and 11th at the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Are you looking for a quality Christian high school education in the Lutheran tradition? My name is Dr. Jay Krause, principal of Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, inviting you to our open house on Sunday, February 21st, from 1 to 3 in the afternoon here at our Edwardsville campus. You can meet faculty and staff, administration, students and parents, and find out more about our dynamic ministry. For more information, contact us at 618-656-0043, or check out our new website at melhs.org.